This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, June the 29th, 2012. Hello and welcome to Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending June the 29th, 2012, which this week have been edited by Irene Dowding and Bill Argles. And today your readers are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Jerry Tuff.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Ros Lydiard. And we are going to begin with what's on this week. And first, and absolutely foremost, I'm very pleased to tell you about a Jubilee garden party which is being organised by the Winchester Talking Newspaper. It's on Thursday, the 19th of July, 2012, of course. It begins at 5 p.m. and goes on until 7. It will be held in the garden of Chesil House, which, and by kind permission of Richard Steele and Partners Limited, that's 4 Chesil Street, Winchester. So that is the Talking Newspaper Jubilee Garden Party, to which you are cordially invited. And please RSVP to John Richards on 02380 732 888. That's 02380 732 888. Or if you can, to email jprich@tiscali.co.uk. And we're very much looking forward to seeing you there if you're able to come. And now, of course, everything is pretty much Olympic-based after we've got through the Jubilee. And the torch relay through Winchester. It will be travelling through Hampshire's county town of Winchester and Kingsworthy on Wednesday, the 11th of July, 2012. Getting close. And residents from across the district and surrounding areas are invited to come and welcome the Olympic flame and share in the excitement of the relay and celebrate the achievements of the local torchbearers. Then the Winchester Festival. The 2012 Winchester Festival opens with the glory of the Bach B minor Mass, the curtain raiser to 10 days of concert in wonderful venues, with programmes ranging from Byrd and Baroque to Blues and Britain. And the venue for that is Winchester Cathedral. The dates are from the 6th of June until the 15th, sorry, I'll repeat that, from the 6th of July to the 15th of July. And if you ring this number, I'm sure they will give you a full programme. And the number is 01962 857 276, and the number again, 01962 857 276. And last, but I have to say not least, a cheeky little trail from me of a play I'm in at the Chesil Theatre. It's called The Breath of Life. It's written by David Hare. It's described as elegantly, shrewdly and wittily written by The Times. We will do our best. It starts on the 7th of July, goes through to the 14th. The tickets are £8 and they are available online if you can on www.chesiltheatre.org.uk, or you may find it useful to have the ticket information number, and this ticket information, you can't book no tickets on this line, but this is 07527 471 539. That number again, 07527 471 539. And perhaps we can look forward to seeing you there. And let's have a look at lighting up times this week. On Friday the 29th, lighting up time ends at 4:54 a.m. and begins at 9:25 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 4th of July, it ends at 4:58 p.m. and begins at 9:23 p.m. If you have any problems with your recording, please contact Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's 01962 862 826. And remember, if you prefer not to listen to any particular track on this recording, you can just skip forward to the next track by pressing the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player. Now, the main headlines this week are Worthy Down could be training hub for forces, developers face a final hurdle in bid to build Silver Hill, and recycling centres could shut one day a week. And Claire, will you please read the first story behind those headlines, please? Thank you.
Worthy Down could be training hub for forces. £270 million plan for Army base to include Navy and Air Force personnel. Defence chiefs have unveiled £270 million plans to turn Worthy Down Army base into a training site for all three services. A major new training college for the Army, Navy and Air Force is proposed. The scheme includes building 92 new homes for military families on farmland next to the existing service housing in Connaught Road. Building work is set to start in 2013 if the City Council gives the go-ahead. The MOD has already approved the plans. Under the proposals, the number of service personnel will be more than double, from 750 to 2,000. Tri-service training would be provided in personnel, administration and logistics. Army bosses say there would be no tanks nor nighttime exercises and the same minimal amount of weapons training that there is now. The base, which was first used by the Royal Flying Corps in 1917, is currently home to the Adjutant General's Corps, which will remain. The plan is for Worthy Down to accommodate the HQ and training for the Royal Logistics Corps after the controversial deep-cut army barracks closes. Four young recruits died in the Surrey base between 1995 and 2000 amid allegations of bullying. Logistics training for the Navy at HMS Raleigh in Cornwall and the RAF at Halton in Buckinghamshire will also move to Worthy Down. The proposals are part of a defence review which aims to reduce the number of sites occupied by the MOD. Lieutenant Colonel Amanda Hassel, Deputy Garrison Commander, said, "I very much welcome this, because it is an opportunity to provide 21st century training and living accommodation for our service people." Lieutenant Colonel Hassel said some of the buildings on the camp dated back to the Second World War, and the redevelopment guaranteed the future of Worthy Down as a military base for at least 25 years. A public exhibition of the proposals was held at South Wanston Village Hall on Monday, with senior army officers available to answer questions face to face. Some locals questioned the need to build new homes when 50 of the existing service houses are empty, while others were concerned about pressure on local schools and GP surgery. However, there are spare places at both South Wanston Primary and Henry Beaufort schools. Lieutenant Colonel Hassel said the empty houses were partly due to redundancies and extra dwellings would only be built if needed. The scheme includes a new public reception area with a museum, single living quarters, mess areas, classrooms, medical and welfare facilities and gym. Project managers said the redevelopment would increase the camp's total floor space by 36,000 square metres. This is equal to a 60% increase, but much of this will be achieved by bulldozing single-storey buildings to make way for two- and three-storey structures in the central and southern part of the camp. They say the new buildings within the camp will take place within the existing built footprint.
Developers face final hurdle in bid to build Silver Hill. Planning inquiry to determine scheme's fate. Developing Silver Hill would breathe new life into a run-down part of the city centre, a public inquiry was told this week. Developers of the £100 million project are trying to overcome a final hurdle into the compulsory purchase of the land at a public inquiry which started in Winchester on Tuesday. The City Council and developer, Henderson Global Investors, are seeking to acquire all the land needed, but several landowners are objecting. The scheme, which already has planning permission, would provide 287 homes, just under 100,000 square feet of new retail space, offices, a new bus station, public car park, and new public spaces. In his opening argument, David Elvin QC, barrister for the City Council, told Planning Inspector Christine Thorby the development would transform the area. He said, "The proposal is to comprehensively redevelop a run-down and underused brownfield site. It will bring significant commercial benefit to Winchester and could increase potential shopper spend by 27%, stopping shoppers leaking away to other places like Basingstoke." Paul Appleton, of project architects Allies and Morrison, said Silver Hill was in desperate need of improvement. Property consultant Nicholas Simons added, "The Silver Hill development is an opportunity to satisfy some of the retail demand in the city without creating surplus stock and supply. Based on the evidence of the strength of demand, the scheme will be able to create a strong, vibrant, and balanced retail mix in Winchester." But barristers representing objectors criticised Mr. Appleton over the height of some of the buildings. Mary Cook, who represents businesses including London and Henley in Middlebrook Street, said, "You said buildings in Silver Hill would not compete with the High Street. But one of the new buildings will be 20 metres high, twice the size of Debenhams, one of the more substantial retail buildings in the High Street. The inspector would not find a retail building anywhere on the High Street anything like 20 metres high." But Mr. Elvin added, "Agreements had been reached with many opposing parties to withdraw objections, including Sainsbury's, Marks and Spencer, and St. John's Winchester Charity. The inquiry is set to finish on July the 6th, when Ms. Thorby will make a recommendation to Eric Pickles, Secretary of State for Communities and Local Government." And the piece is illustrated by an artist's impression of the proposed Silver Hill scheme, with the caption, "Coming soon?"
Recycling centres could shut one day a week. Green campaigners have warned plans to close recycling centres one day a week to cut costs could spark an increase in fly tipping. Household waste recycling centres in Winchester, Eastleigh, Southampton, Fareham, Romsey and the New Forest could revert to 6 days a week under the proposals from Hampshire County Council. Summer opening hours could also be cut in an attempt to save up to £720,000 a year. Ray Cobbett, coordinator for Hampshire Friends of the Earth, said, "The centres need to be open 7 days a week. Most working people can't get there during the week. Right now the opening hours are absolutely fine and we don't want any reduction. This sends out the wrong message and it will be another temptation to fly tip, which is already a major problem and costing local authorities a lot of money." Under the proposals, centres would close to the public on the least busy day of the week and instead open to traders who would pay to dump waste such as soil, rubble, and plasterboard. Currently, commercial and industrial waste has to be disposed of elsewhere. The County Council, which runs the recycling scheme alongside Portsmouth and Southampton City Councils, is planning to test the proposals at trial sites. In total, there are 26 household waste recycling centres across Hampshire, which were visited by 4.5 million people to dispose of 230,000 tonnes of rubbish in 2010 to 2011, diverting 70% from landfill. The County Council has ruled out closing any centres. Hopkins Recycling has a 5-year contract to run the centres, which will be re-tendered in 2013-14. The public will be consulted before the changes are introduced. Councillor Mel Kendall, Executive Member for Environment and Transport, said, "Before making any final decision, I will be looking at the potential impacts on residents and carefully considering the responses to our consultation."
And thank you. Those were our headline stories for this week, and we'll continue as usual with the death notice and then Christian comment, and they'll be followed by letters to the editor, which we have 9 this week, historical items, chronicle comment and first person. And we'll begin that section with the death notices. Anderson, Audrey Beatrice, peacefully, 8th of June, age 86. Baker, Rita, née George, Rita Baker, 24th of June, 2012. Coleman, Harry Coleman, peacefully, 12th of June. Farbrother, David Leonard, David Farbrother, peacefully, 26th of June, age 91. Garrett, Constance Edwina Garrett, Connie, peacefully, 23rd of June, aged 87. Grant, Trish, née Loney, Trish Grant, peacefully, 15th of June, aged 67. McIver, Tony McIver, Sparrow. Mepham, Diana, née Smith, Diana Mepham. Those two last, by the way, had no date on the item in the Hampshire Chronicle. Macaulay, Patricia Kathleen, Patricia Macaulay, Pat, aged 93. Pass, Dennis Keith, Dennis Pass, peacefully, 15th of June, aged 85. Piper, Jean Mary, Jean Piper, 22nd of June, aged 76. Sheard, K. Sheard, MBE, peacefully, 3rd of June, aged 94. Simpkins, Charles Peter Simpkins, peacefully, 21st of June, age 90. And Williams, Dorothy Williams, Dot, aged 86. And we'll have Claire now, please, with Christian comment,
which is entitled Setting an Example to Us All, and is by Rosemary A. Baker. As I write this, the Queen has begun a 2-day Diamond Jubilee visit to Northern Ireland, which will include an historic meeting with Martin McGuinness. The monarch will shake hands with the Stormont Deputy First Minister, a former IRA commander, in a gesture that will herald another milestone in Anglo-Irish relations, and indeed the peace process as a whole in Northern Ireland. Speaking ahead of the meeting, Mr. McGuinness made reference to a famous remark by former Premier Tony Blair before the 1998 Good Friday peace deal. "There was a lot of talk in the past about someone feeling the hand of history on his shoulder." The first handshake is said to be taking place in private, but their farewell will apparently be filmed. The meeting, including the President of the Irish Republic, is being hosted by the peace charity Cooperation Ireland. The Queen last year broke down barriers on both sides of the border through her conciliatory words during her visit to the Republic. On Tuesday, Protestants and Catholics in the Northern Irish town of Enniskillen which was devastated by an IRA bomb 25 years ago, showed their progress towards unity by joining forces to host the Queen's visit. In an Anglican cathedral, a service of thanksgiving for the Diamond Jubilee was staged, including the clergy of all denominations. Then, a few metres across the street, the Queen made history by visiting a Roman Catholic church for the first time in either Northern Ireland or the Republic. She met members of both communities, as well as relatives of those killed in the bombing. It is hoped these actions by the Queen will close the circle and allow the peace process to conclude. The fact that she was also personally involved in the Troubles through the death of Earl Mountbatten and members of his family makes her contribution all the more significant. What many of us perhaps haven't realised is that the peace process in Northern Ireland is studied throughout the world and is seen as a template for ending and resolving conflict. What is sad, of course, is that the conflict in Ireland has to some extent been between denominations of the Christian Church, which itself preaches the message of peace and reconciliation espoused by its founder, Jesus Christ. Should we be surprised at this, I wonder, when so often even Christians fail to get on with each other, even within congregations? People are hurt, sometimes because of insensitivity of others, but sometimes because of their own outlook on life and a resistance to change. As Christians, we have a template to follow, and our Queen is out there following it and setting us all an example. And that was written by Rosemary A. Baker. This letter from Gareth Bloomfield is headed, "What has happened to Winchester's hanging baskets?" Sir, what on earth have Winchester BID done with hanging baskets and public flowers in the city? 2 years ago, I made a YouTube video of Portsmouth hanging baskets during a bank holiday weekend that looked as bad as Winchester's today. Ironically, at that time, I filmed Winchester's saying, "Look, they should be like this." I can't do that again with the rubbish that's hanging up now. I was hugely disappointed during the recent Diamond Jubilee celebration weekend to see that Winchester City no longer had the vibrant flowers cascading from the baskets, but instead had contents in the baskets which appeared to have been urinated upon by the local cat and dog population. The baskets proudly displayed, "Sponsored by Winchester BID." Though I'm sorry to say they have nothing to be proud of with those. In such an important year with Jubilee, Hat Fair and Olympics torches, it would appear that Winchester BID have taken over the running of flower baskets and probably changed the supplier. My guess is they went cheaper and they got what they paid for. I know we have to cut costs, but come on, Winchester BID. If you're going to charge local businesses for flowers, give them something that resembles their investment and bring back those beautiful baskets we've had before. Gareth Bloomfield, Green Hill Road, Full Flood, Winchester. And there's a picture of then our Winchester's hanging baskets in 2010 and now in 2012.
A letter from Alan Wigley of Kingsworthy says, "Council housing must be reviewed. Whilst we applaud the City Council's plan for 300 new homes in the Winchester district, some issues need consideration. When half the new homes in the current year bought from housing groups, how much of the remainder will be newly built in overcrowded areas, e.g. Stanmore and Highcliffe, and how many of the newly acquired homes will be refurbished? Too many homes are being squashed into pockets of land without proper play areas and where parking is impossible. The council has been unable to properly refurbish their housing stock for several years, except when a tenant moves out, due to negative equity, where part of the rental income goes to central government. As a result, many properties have deteriorated, and others have kitchens and bathrooms over 40 years old. How much money will the council grant towards improving the existing stock for tenants who have seen their rental charges increase way beyond the rate of inflation? Council housing needs to be reviewed to ensure only those in genuine need are allocated accommodation. Under the present system, someone earning up to £100,000 a year can be given council housing, and there have been cases of applicants on very high incomes living in town centre flats, some of which are rented out to students and others without proper checks. The figure of over 3,000 on the waiting list was reached before the recession and was due more to the lack of house building and the bidding system which allows anybody to apply for housing. With such an open-door policy, it would be interesting to have a breakdown of those applying for housing, if only to dissuade speculators from being able to buy and sell using the 70% discount recently introduced and others who have the means to afford private accommodation. Moreover, how many of the properties the council intends to purchase have been sold to them by ex-tenants? Alan Wigley, Harwood Place, Kingsworthy.
This letter comes from Sue Faulkner, the chairman of Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club, and it's headed Making Winchester Fit for the Future. I read with interest Dr. Bennett's letter in the Chronicle, June the 21st, and his perception about who is supporting the campaign for a new sports and leisure centre and why. Through Winchester Fit for the Future, the drip of support is rapidly becoming a flood. But this is not just a campaign for a pool. Many sports clubs are struggling to find facilities for training or venues suitable for competition. A new community sports and leisure centre would allow our gymnasts, netball and basketball players, athletes and many others to train and compete in a facility that fosters local passion for sport. We must recognise the true value of the voluntary resources in clubs, their contribution to healthy lifestyles, and the fun they provide for the community by providing decent facilities. We need to acknowledge the limitations of the existing facility and consider the capital investment of £4 to £5 million needed just to keep the River Park Leisure Centre open over the next few years. We have an obligation to equip the city and broader district for sport and leisure for the next 40 years and more, just as the council did in 1974 when River Park was built. Dr. Bennett refers to an Olympic pool, which may suggest a pool for the elite minority. In fact, the proposal includes a 50-metre community pool. Technology has come a long way. A modern 50-metre pool with variable depth and partitions would offer simultaneous use for different activities and a competition venue for aquatic sports. Winchester City Penguins Primary School's gala last Friday, attended by 300 local children, and our swim courses for local schools are great examples of the benefits clubs can offer the community. We simply cannot meet the growth in participation with the pool time available. Winchester can and should have this jewel in the crown. Adequate provision for sport and leisure must be incorporated into any vision for the city and district to ensure Winchester is fit for the future. Full details of the proposal are available at www.fitforthefuture.org, which is run together as one word, except that four is a number, fitforthefuture.org. Sue Faulkner, Chairman, Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club.
This letter from Councillor Roger Huckstep is about St Cross Meadow in very good hands. Sir, as portfolio holder for environment, I am responsible for the arrangements between Winchester City Council and Hampshire Wildlife Trust regarding St Faith's Meadow in St Cross. So wish to respond to the article in your issue of June the 21st. St Faith's Meadow has existed in various guises as a meadow for hundreds of years and was managed as such until the early 1900s. It was planted with commercial crops of willow and poplar after the Second World War. These trees have come to dominate the habitats for which it was designated a site of special scientific interest in 2000. The Council has provided grants to the Trust for the management of St Faith's Meadow, aimed at improving the habitat and reintroducing grazing. The Trust has successfully entered the site into the Environmental Stewardship Scheme, which will provide additional resources over the next 10 years to achieve these objectives and fund tree works, scrub management, and ditch and channel improvements. The Council leases Winnell Moors to the Trust and provides funding for wardening and management. The Trust's management of Winnell Moors is achieving national acclaim, and I believe that it is well placed to manage St Faith's Meadow and achieve the desired improvement in the condition of the SSSI. In response to the concerns about previous use of Council grants, I can reassure Council taxpayers that I will ensure that any future programme for the management of St Faith's continues to offer value for money, that delivery is monitored by officers and progress reported to both myself and other elected members. And that was from Councillor Roger Huckstep, Portfolio Holder for Environment, Winchester City Council.
This letter is entitled Hampshire Interest in Olympic Ideals, and comes from Jane, Lady Portal. It may be of interest to some of your readers to hear that Commander Bill Collins, RN, retired, who lived in St Cross, had run for the Navy, was asked by the committee of the 1948 Olympic Games to organise the torch relay from Olympia in Greece to Wembley and on to the regatta in Torquay. He kindly invited me to be his secretary. The late Lord Portal of Laverstoke, Wyndham, was asked by the government to be the president, and specifically to keep the costs down, it being not long after the end of the war. His idea was to scrap the torch relay. However, the chairman was Lord Burleigh, later Marquess of Exeter, a gold medalist in the 1928 Games. He was an idealist and wouldn't hear of such a thing, believing the Olympic flame to be the embodiment of the spirit and aspiration of the Olympic ideals. Luckily, Lord Burleigh won, after a tussle or two. Little did I think I'd be married to a portal 2 years later. So all three of these players lived in Hampshire, two coming from Winchester. The torches were carried across Europe by a selected members of athletic clubs. The final torch reached the Wembley Arena for the opening ceremony on July the 29th, and was carried by John Mark, who was chosen for his ability and good looks. Jane, Lady Portal, DL, Kingsgate Road, Winchester.
And we're going to go on to historical items now. That was a slightly historical item there. We're going to start with 200 years ago, please, with Robin.
And there are two items from 1812. The first, government is in possession of letters passed between Bonaparte and Bernadotte. The French ruler, as an ultimatum before prosecuting hostilities against Sweden, wrote to the Crown Prince, offering to restore Pomerania, Finland, and the estates of Bernadotte in France and Italy, on the condition the latter would cooperate with him in accomplishing his designs in the north. The answer was short. With regard to Pomerania, the chance of war may again restore it to me. With respect to Finland, it is not yours to bestow. And the second item. In consequence of information that unlawful games were carried on at number 40 in Pall Mall, Atkins, Taunton, Salmon, Mance, Petty and others were dispatched from Bow Street on Thursday with a warrant to search the house and apprehend all in it. They found no difficulty gaining admittance, and a scuffle ensued between the persons round the gaming table and the officers. A gentleman of rank made his escape out of the window.
100 years ago, 1912. Their Majesties the King and Queen have graciously consented to be received ad portus at Winchester College on Monday, July the 15th. They will spend an hour within the precincts of the school. This will be the first occasion since the visit of King George III and Queen Charlotte in 1778 that we have been honoured by the presence of a reigning monarch. And the second item. The second conference of Le Cercle Français took place at the high school on the 20th instant. The lecture, given by Monsieur Damien Davy, was on the castles of the Loire and was illustrated by lantern slides. Monsieur Davy described a 12 days bicycle tour beginning at Mont Saint-Michel, from where he visited Fougères and its ruined castle, historical Amboise and Blois, full of recollections of Catherine de' Medici. The slide showing her cupboards opened by secret springs was most interesting.
50 years ago, 1962, Winchester Rural District Council was told on Wednesday that all of the 115 aluminium bungalows on the Springfield Estate, Kingsworthy, show evidence of corrosion and that in 20 of them it has reached perforation stage. It is considered, however, that the majority have a life of 2 to 4 years, but the more seriously affected ones may have to be removed earlier. And second item, 50 years ago, the Marquess of Winchester, who has died in Monte Carlo, had lived abroad since the early 1930s. The Premier, Marquess of England, he was 99, and lineal descendant of the celebrated 5th Marquess, who in the Civil Wars defended Basing House for King Charles to its last stone. His progenitor, the 1st Marquess, was Lord Treasurer in the reigns of Edward VI, Mary and Elizabeth. And it was he who, when asked how he had kept his post for so long, gave the classic reply, "By being a willow, not an oak."
25 years ago, 1987. A first paragraph. A distinguished local conservationist claims that groups have been conned into supporting an alternative route for the M3. Mr. James Hancock, president of the British Trust for Ornithology and the Hampshire Ornithological Society, who lives in St. Cross, says he is in favour of the Department of Transport's proposed route east of St. Catherine's Hill. This route is to be opposed by the Countryside Commission and English Heritage at the reopened inquiry next week. Second paragraph. The hope that land prices might get back to reality was expressed by the Mayor, Major Douglas Colville, when he opened a development of 24 apartments for the retired and active elderly in Winchester. He said land prices had risen beyond any dream, which was a pity, as a lot of people wished to live in the city but could not afford to. Major Colville pointed out that in Germany house prices had fallen 22%, and he believed that with stability the same might be achieved here.
Editorial comment this week has the heading, A Vote of Confidence in Winchester. Defence Chief's plans to turn Worthy-Down Army Base into a training hub for all three armed services is a vote of confidence in Winchester. The £270 million plans for the base, north of the city, could turn it into a major new 21st century training college. The scheme has already won the support of the MOD. Tri-service training would be provided in personnel, administration and logistics. Army bosses say there would be no tanks or nighttime exercises and the same minimal amount of weapons training that there is now. There were naturally a few concerns raised at Monday's public exhibition on the proposals about local infrastructure. However, for example, there are spare places at both South Wanston Primary and Henry Beaufort schools nearby. If approved by City Council planners, this could be the time for local facilities near the base to be improved. There have been calls in the past for new land being made available for a burial ground, an additional football pitch, and a new cycle route into Winchester. But it is crucial for all local people to fully engage in the consultation process and make their voices heard. We're going to move on now to First Person, Please by Robin.
And First Person this week is written by Ron Allison and is entitled Time for the Mid-Year Audit. So here we are, halfway through 2012, and time perhaps to both stop and take stock and to look ahead. Or, as Eric Morecambe would have put it, what do you think of it so far? Mind you, that would be within a few seconds of his appearing on stage, and we have 6 months to review. Writing personally, I recall with delight my grandson's wedding and my own 80th birthday celebrations. Both were wonderful family occasions. At the same time, sadness at the death of friends and former colleagues stays with me, but with special memories of happy and worthwhile times. Many of you will have similar mixed emotions. They are inevitable. On the larger stage, most will recall this year for being the Diamond Jubilee of the Queen's reign, with celebrations that did full justice to the anniversary and to the Queen herself. The highlights, unless you personally were involved in a royal visit, were the Thames pageant, the concert, and the service of thanksgiving. All were superbly staged, and even though there were moments of embarrassment, some of the BBC's younger commentators and presenters, and one or two of the comedians at the concert come to mind, it was all hugely successful. And the Duke of Edinburgh was fit enough for the Queen's birthday parade and royal ascot. But maybe your own street party topped everything. So how do we follow that? In our own lives, with the same mixture, but with having to take into account some hard financial realities. There will be no escaping those. But don't forget the little matter of the Olympic Games, nor that the Olympic flame has still to pass through Hampshire on its way to London. Tons of gold for Britain? I doubt it. But it will be for London staging the Games that 2012 will be mostly remembered in the world of sport. It certainly won't be England's experience in Euro 2012. That we will recall in the years ahead, only to add it to that familiar list of lost quarter-final penalty shootouts. And at least it means we're not facing Germany this evening. But in our audit of the year so far, we have Southampton's promotion to the Premier League to cherish, and a nail-biting season to anticipate. So it's not all bad football news. all these events have happened in a world of serious crises. World leaders meet for summit after summit. My hope is that from one of them, at least, something substantial will result, and that will generally improve the situation. I also hope that we will all be able to enjoy the second half of 2012.
And this week we have an in-brief item which Jerry will be reading for us now, please.
And it's headed, Slight Fall in Districts Jobless. There has been a slight fall in the number of people looking for jobs in Winchester, according to the latest figures. The dole queues in the Winchester City Council area fell from 980 in April to 975 in May. The numbers were also down in Eastleigh and Southampton, but up in Test Valley and Fareham. And the figures are given as Eastleigh, down from 1,588 to 1,557. Fareham, up from 1,312 to 1,323. Southampton, down from 5,690 to 5,677. And Test Valley up from 1,103 to 1,140. Employment Minister Chris Grayling said the increase in employment was very encouraging, but said he remained cautious given the uncertainty surrounding the Eurozone crisis.
And finally, or I should say further, we've got the items of general news for you. And we'd like to start that with Claire, please.
This piece is headed Back to the Future. It could have ended up as a pile of rubble, but work is starting that will see its renaissance. The Hockley Viaduct, threatened with demolition in the 1980s, is going to be integrated into the National Cycle Network. Winchester City Council, with Sustrans, the County Council and the Friends of Hockley Viaduct, celebrated the start of building works. Avon construction has begun the first stage, due to finish in October. Brickwork and parapets will be repaired, along with the laying of a concrete deck. Some parts of the parapets will be lowered to open up views along the Itchen Valley. Victoria Weston, WCC portfolio holder for planning and transport, said, "The restoration of the viaduct has been championed for years by residents and I'm delighted it is underway. It is particularly pleasing to be solving a current transport requirement for cyclists and walkers, whilst providing a wonderful leisure facility for all, using a structure designed for transport in a bygone era." The project has received huge financial support from Winchester City Council with £500,000, Hampshire County Council, which has given £250,000, and Sustrans, which has committed £200,000 from the Department of Transport Linking Places Fund. Following the success of the planning application, the remainder of the project and route is planned to be completed early in 2013. And there's a picture of all these folk celebrating the checks.
Great Minster Street upgrade approved. Plans to further revamp one of Winchester's oldest streets has been approved by the City Council. Around £300,000 has been earmarked to repave Great Minster Street over the next year. It is phase two of the refurbishment of the square, which was completed earlier this year with traditional Yorkstone paving, similar to improvements made to High Street and Market Street. News of the extension has been welcomed by traders in Great Minster Street. Keith Scorgie, Managing Director of Design House, said, "I'm delighted with this. We loved that the pavement was widened by Laplace and the old vine in the first part of the project. which narrows the road and slows traffic down. But we found traffic was not slowing down until it came to the new paving, so cars were zooming past us. Including the rest of Great Minster Street will improve traffic flow and make it look beautiful. Council leader Keith Wood said, "The principle being followed is we believe Winchester is a special place and should remain so. The square was a very good job, and this takes it further up Great Minster Street to complete it. The City Council will provide £60,000 towards the costs, while the County Council will pay the other £240,000. A timescale for the works has not been finalised."
Disruption minimal in doctors' strike. It was a day of action that some feared would leave patients without vital medical care and treatment. But it was business as usual for the majority of doctors across the South. At Southampton General Hospital, fewer than 10 appointments were cancelled, and a poll of 85 GP surgeries across South Hampshire revealed that just 16% took part in the national protest against pension plans last week. Of those asked if their surgery took part in the day of action, 13 confirmed they had doctors stopping all non-urgent care, while one practice suspended some non-urgent care, but still saw those patients who had booked routine appointments more than 10 days ago. 11 surgeries declined to comment at all. Nationally, it was a similar picture, with figures suggesting 1 in 10 patients had their operations, outpatient appointments or treatments rescheduled due to the British Medical Association's industrial action. Meanwhile, the Department of Health said a quarter of GP surgeries operated a reduced service due to the day of action, with about 2,000 surgeries having at least one member of staff taking part. They claimed just 8% of doctors working in the NHS in England took part, totalling around 11,500 doctors. Health bosses in our region confirmed there was very little disruption to patient care at both the Royal Hampshire County Hospital Winchester and Southampton General Hospital, as well as in GP surgeries.
Acclaimed rock choir at Youth Options charity concert. People are being encouraged to rock the night away in aid of a Hampshire youth charity next month. The rock choir will be performing at Stoneham Park in Eastleigh to mark the 75th anniversary of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Youth Options, which supports disadvantaged youngsters across the county. The 400-strong choir will be singing a variety of pop, Motown and gospel classics at the event. Formed in 2005, the choir has more than 16,000 members in 186 towns across the UK, making it the largest contemporary choir in the world. It has been dubbed the People's Choir and includes children, teenagers and adults of all levels of ability. The choir has performed on numerous TV programmes, including The One Show, BBC Breakfast and The Paul O'Grady Show. Tickets for the event on Friday, July the 6th are available in multiples of 4 at £40. Single tickets bought prior to the show are £12.50. Tickets on the door are £15. Under 5s go free. Tickets are also available at dailyecho.co.uk/rockchoir and at the offices of the Hampshire Chronicle at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, and the Daily Echo at Test Lane, Redbridge, Southampton, and 17 High Street, Eastleigh. For more details, call 01794 525510.
New city surgery gets green light. A new doctor's surgery, the first part of the Silver Hill scheme in Winchester, has been approved. The City Council Planning Committee backed the proposal for the relocation of the St Clement's Surgery to the corner of Friarsgate and Upper Brook Street. Its current location in Tanner Street is in the heart of the Silver Hill redevelopment, which could start next year following a public inquiry into the compulsory purchase orders which started on Tuesday. The new surgery will be built on the site of a 52-space public car park. It will have more than 20 consulting rooms, but only 25 parking spaces, 3 disabled spaces for the public and 22 for staff. The current surgery has around 17,000 patients registered. John Hearn, planning officer, said, "This is unashamedly modern, of very high quality materials. It is an intelligent, well-considered and positive building which will bring quality to the town centre." Mr. Hearn said the buff-coloured bricks would be less austere than red bricks. The council received 5 letters of objection from neighbours complaining about the loss of light and parking. Councillor Eileen Berry, a patient at St Clement's for 55 years, disliked the design. "This reflects nothing. It imposes another building that will be ridiculed because it is not fit for that space." Councillor Jane Rutter asked why the design could not incorporate heritage elements or Hampshire flint and red brick. Sue Nelms, the ward councillor, was concerned about the two-way traffic between the entrance to the surgery off Upper Brook Street and Friarsgate, saying it was unnecessary and dangerous. Dr. Kim Roberts, a partner at St Clement's for 24 years, said it needed bigger premises as GPs were taking on more work from hospitals. She said St Clement's was the last GP practice in the city centre and had seen an increase in patients since Riverside moved to Aurum's Arbour and Friarsgate to Week. Councillor Robert Johnson said, "It does blend in. It is an exciting and innovative design." Councillors approve the scheme by 9 votes to 1.
And here's news of another concert to raise money for charity. A community transport service is to get a boost thanks to music lovers. Bishop's Waltham Minibus Group is hosting a concert with music from Southampton-based Ocean Brass at Jubilee Hall in Bishop's Waltham on Saturday, July the 7th at 7:30 p.m. There will also be a raffle and refreshments at the venue on Little Shore Lane. The minibus, which can be hired by community groups, clubs and schools, takes elderly people to lunch clubs 3 times a week and once a week brings people from outlying areas into Bishop's Waltham for shopping. Tickets for the concert cost £7 or £2.50 for children and can be bought from Apple Crumble and Kitch on the High Street, Bishop's Waltham, or at the door on the night.
Record for swim team. Peter Simmons swimmers proudly displayed their 2012 Rotary Charity Swimathon Champions Trophy, recognising a swimathon distance record. One of their 3 teams who took part swam 244 lengths in the allotted time, bettering a previous PSC team best of 233 lengths. In all, the 3 squads swam 626 lengths. The 2 male and 1 female teams swimming 244, 200 and 182 lengths respectively. Participating male swimmers were Tom Mills, Ollie Jeffcott, Sam Taylor, Matt Dewey, Chris Lee, Adam Lewis and Angus McKenzie, with ex-students Justin Craig and Sam Redman. Female team members were Imogen Adcock, Georgia Tozen, Rachel Carter, Emma Tinker, Sadie Fleetwood, Laura Fenwick, and Emily Hardy. They are a great group who are real ambassadors both for the college and their sport, said Lynn Holmes, head of activities at the college. And there's a lovely picture of them all beaming away with holding their trophy.
Historic City Chapel Open. A historic hidden corner of Winchester has opened to the public. The Chapel of St John the Baptist on the Broadway is one of the few surviving medieval hospital chapels still standing. It is owned by the St John's Winchester Charity, which has three almshouses for some 93 people in the city centre. The chapel is now open to visitors on 2 days a week, Monday 10 a.m. to noon and Thursday 2 to 4 p.m. Admission is free. The Reverend Ivor Douse, an almshouse resident, said, "The chapel has until now always been closed except during services. It is of great historic interest. Whenever we hold services, the public wants to come and have a look around. We thought that with the Jubilee and Olympics, that this was the year to open it. The main problem has been manning it. Being historic, we could not leave it open without someone being there to answer questions and to show people around. The chapel was built in 1428, but was ransacked at the Reformation in 1546, and then put to secular uses until returning to become a chapel in 1838. It stands next to St John's House, which was a medieval hospital. Patients would lie in bed, but could look through four windows into the chapel. The windows are still there."
Put to bed early because of home care shake-up. Elderly and disabled people are being put to bed early in a bid to save cash, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. And one Winchester pensioner has now complained his human rights are being neglected as he has been left in bed for 15 hours per day. Some have received visits from home helps and been fed, washed and put to bed as early as 5 p.m. Many others are in bed by 8 p.m. because of a shortage of carers. Last week, the Chronicle highlighted how Hampshire County Council and Southampton City Council commissioned just 15 minutes of care for some frail pensioners still living at home. Now it can be revealed that many older people have little or no control over what time their home care visits happen, and some bedtimes have been brought forward. The experience of Terry Lister, 76, who suffers from advanced multiple sclerosis, which confines him to his wheelchair, is a case in point. The grandfather of six cannot get up, wash, or dress without help. Carers from a night care service at Hampshire County Council used to visit at about 10:30 p.m, with the NHS paying for his care. But the NHS switched to a private agency. Now Mr. Lister is in bed by 8:30 p.m. and not helped to get up until 9:30 a.m, a period of 13 hours, plus a two-hour afternoon rest, 15 hours in total. Mr. Lister, who lives in St. Giles Hill, said, "Well, it's made an enormous difference. During the afternoon, I have 2 hours in bed because of pressure sores from my wheelchair, but now I shall be getting them from the bed." Carers have told me of people being put to bed at 5 p.m. I was offered a 6:30 p.m. slot and refused it, but many elderly people don't complain and just accept it. You rely on your carers, and some people have no family to back them up. I feel it is against my human rights because it prevents me from having any family, recreation or creative life. David Watt, chief executive of Southampton-based Nobilis Home Care, said his carers put people to bed up to 10:30 p.m. Mr. Watt said. We are unusual. We try to be responsive to what people want, but our private client rates are higher than the County Council is prepared to pay. Mr. Watt said his company provided a minimum of 30 minutes care and chose not to bid for the council contract. As reported last week, the council saved £4.9 million in 2011-12 by capping the price it pays for social care. County Councillor Alan Dowding, Liberal Democrat opposition spokesman for adult social care, said, I want more time spent with elderly people and for them to have more choice. If someone's being put to bed at 6:30 p.m. or 7:30 p.m. and they would prefer 10 p.m. and there's an extra cost to that, well, the council should allow that to happen. These elderly people deserve better, and the public expects that because one day they could be in that position. Hampshire County Council said it commissioned home care between 7 a.m. and 10 p.m. and provided more than 500 visits daily between 9 p.m. and 10 p.m.
TV's Dan goes back to school. A Winchester school has welcomed a famous pupil back through its doors. Television star Dan Lobb returned to Colden Common Primary School for the first time since leaving more than 20 years ago. Dan, who presents ITV's Daybreak and has been a contestant on the BBC's Strictly Come Dancing, spent time answering questions from pupils before presenting awards at an assembly. Rachel Adams, school business manager, said Dan was a big hit with the students. She said, it was brilliant to have him here. He was amazing, and I think he may have had a better time than the children, who were on cloud nine themselves. Dan, a former professional tennis player, had not seen the school since it was rebuilt after burning down in 1996, and Ms. Adams said he thought it looked better than ever. She added he really enjoyed coming back to his old school and said he liked it better than when he was a pupil here, although he enjoyed school then too. He rounded off his visit by unveiling a prototype of a new school banner created for its upcoming Olympic week. And there's a picture of Dan Lobb with pupils from Colden Common Primary during his visit, and they're all beaming quite happily.
£600,000 B&B plan for city. Entrepreneur's latest scheme. A Winchester pub entrepreneur has revealed plans for a £600,000 bed and breakfast facility in the city. David Nicholson is proposing to demolish buildings next to his Black Boy pub in Wharf Hill and build the new business called the Black Hole. It would have 9 bedrooms and share the same kitchen as the pub. Mr. Nicholson said, I decided to go for a B&B because I think we are short of rooms in Winchester and I have a lot of people asking me for rooms, so I think there is a demand for it and I have the space to be able to do something. The end building on Wharf Hill is hideous and has no architectural merit, and it would be nice to do something at the top of the street. The people I have spoken to about it in the area all think it will be very good, and they are excited and would love to see the corner done up. They are concerned about parking, but I think that will be irrelevant because I plan to use the Chesil Street car park for customers. He added, It will be good for Winchester and it will be good for my business, and I think it will fit in the street very nicely. Mr. Nicholson said he had been planning to start a B&B for several years, but could not add any rooms to the Black Boy because it was a listed building. He said, It is the culmination of a long-term plan, and everything I do is long-term. I do not look for overnight success. Mr. Nicholson added he would look for distinctive decorations for the B&B to avoid a generic appearance. The problem is making it look old and rusting. Rustic costs twice as much, but I enjoy doing that and sourcing the furniture and things like that. It's not going to be full of IKEA lines because I'm not very good at that sort of stuff. Mr. Nicholson has been running successful businesses in Winchester since 1995, including the Michelin star-winning Black Rat restaurant in Chesil Street and wine bar The Black Bottle in Bridge Street. The Black Hole would take around 8 months to build, and Mr. Nicholson is hoping to open it at the end of 2013. A planning application will be decided by the City Council in due course. And this piece is illustrated by a small portrait of David Nicholson and an artist's impression of what the building would look like from Chesil Street, with, on the right, the Black Rat.
Proud to represent the Queen in the county. The Queen's Diamond Jubilee had a special significance for one Hampshire resident who has been associated with royal pomp and circumstance for the past 18 years. Dame Mary Fagan has been the Queen's representative in Hampshire since 1994, after being appointed Her Majesty's Lord Lieutenant. She is responsible for arrangements made for royal visits to the county and is the first person to greet members of the royal family when they visit. Last month, she was on hand to welcome His Royal Highness the Earl of Wessex to the Jubilee service at Winchester Cathedral. Dame Mary, who was born in Nottinghamshire, lives near Basingstoke with her husband, Captain Christopher Fagan. During her 18 years of voluntary service, she has met the Queen many times by welcoming her to Hampshire and also visiting her at Buckingham Palace. Paying tribute to the Queen's long reign, Dame Mary said, 60 years is a tremendous time and an incredible achievement. The Diamond Jubilee was a moment for us all to be especially grateful for the contribution which the Queen has made to our country and the Commonwealth. It was an opportunity for us all to celebrate and say thank you. It's very rare to have a Diamond Jubilee, and everybody was celebrating. Dame Mary, who believes the Queen is just as popular now as ever, said, I think the Diamond Jubilee was even bigger than the Golden Jubilee. In the run-up to the Jubilee, Dame Mary visited many schools across Hampshire to help plant young oak saplings. She attended the Jubilee pageant on the River Thames, in which disabled yachtsman Jeff Holt sailed with young people, including some from Naomi House Children's Hospice in Sutton Scotney, joining hundreds of other boats in the flotilla. Dame Mary was involved in the search for volunteers who have dedicated 60 years to volunteering to attend last month's Winchester Cathedral service. After the service, a bouquet of Hampshire roses was sent to the Queen as a gift from the county.
Aim high, says Jumper Jack. A Winchester teenage athlete has been inspiring local schoolchildren. Peter Simmons College student Jack Mitchell, who's 17, visited Hairstock Primary School last week to talk to them about his experiences in sport. Jack, a member of the Hampshire Talented Young Athletes Scheme, competes in the high jump and has a personal best of 1.93 metres. He started playing sports at the age of 9, and settled on the high jump after trying a number of others, including golf, sprinting and karate. The visit was organised by the school's Olympic Committee and is the latest in a series to encourage children to learn about the games and take part in sport. Head teacher Jackie Sankey said, Jack's visit, and in particular the messages he conveyed in his talk, to go out and try new things and not to be afraid of failure, were inspirational. The children thoroughly enjoyed hearing from a young athlete who is starting his sporting journey, and we wish Jack luck with his athletic career. And there's a picture of him standing with some of the youngsters at Hairstock Primary School.
Simon completes marathon trek. Simon Harmer, the wounded soldier from Kingsworthy, has completed the world's toughest cycling race ahead of schedule. Simon and the team Battle Black were warmly welcomed into Annapolis, Maryland, after completing the 3,051-mile Race Across America, RAAM, in just 7 days, 7 hours and 59 minutes, with an average speed of over 17 miles per hour. Simon, 36, a sergeant who lost both legs in an IED explosion, completed the race on a handbike. He said, "It's been a tough 8 days, but it's a huge achievement to have got this far. Kansas was definitely the toughest part, with the heat and barren landscape. It feels awesome to have completed the RAAM, and I'd like to say thank you to everyone for their support." Every rider in Team Battle Back Black has has been either wounded on operations or injured in training, including four double amputees who have tackled the race on handbikes. This is the first time British military wounded have attempted the race, and they have been competing against both professional and amateur cyclists, as well as a team of US wounded. The team have cycled 3,051 miles non-stop, 24 hours a day, in temperatures of up to 45 degrees Celsius, and through 12 states from California before arriving in Annapolis last Saturday evening. The team are raising money for Help for Heroes to give back to other wounded servicemen and women. And the piece is illustrated by a photograph of Simon Harmer in his bicycle.
Focus on Stroke Meeting. Winchester Health Bosses are holding a meeting next week for the public to learn more about strokes. The theme will be Focus on Stroke and includes a presentation by the Clinical Director of Long-Term Care, Dr. John Duffy. People will be able to find out more about the work of the Hyper-Acute Stroke Unit at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The unit boasts a 24-hour clot-busting treatment and dedicated stroke specialist staff, and has been rated in the top 25% of stroke services nationally since 2006. The meeting, organised by Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, will be in the Education Centre at the RHCH on Monday, July the 2nd, from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m.
Award for Itchin Project. The Itchin Navigation Heritage Trail Project near Winchester has won a prestigious national award. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, which ran the project, said it was delighted with the Waterways Renaissance Award in the Natural Environment category. The project focused on restoring the banks and reducing the number of trees which were damaging the precious habitat for flora and fauna. The judges commended the project team for its bioengineering techniques on the highly protected waterway, taking into consideration protected species and sensitive habitats, whilst delivering sustainable solutions to bank erosion. They added, "It is rare to have such good public access to a wildlife-rich chalk river as exists on this navigation, with a footpath running the whole length." And there's a picture of three workers dealing with the plants, etc., on the edge of the river.
Broadlands reopens after refit. One of Hampshire's most famous stately homes reopened on Monday after a £5.25 million refurbishment. Broadlands House in Romsey had been closed for the last 3 years to undergo an extensive refit, which involved the removal of several tons of asbestos and the replacement of wiring, which a survey showed to be a fire hazard. A new heating system was also put in, and the Grade 1 listed Palladian-style mansion is now heated by 290-kilowatt boilers, which burn wood harvested from the 4,500-acre estate. The project has seen the installation of 118 new radiators, 37 miles of electric cable, and 2.5 miles of copper piping. As part of the project, the leading interior designer, David Milinaric, was persuaded out of retirement to work on three rooms, the drawing room, dining room, and sculpture hall. These, together with the two main staircases, have been refurbished. Much of the work has followed painstaking paint scrapes to reveal the previous layers to ascertain the original colours used by Henry Holland, the second Lord Palmerston's designer. Estates manager Richard Jordan Baker said that the original estimated cost for the works had been £4 million, but that figure had grown partly due to the amount of asbestos found, which had been greater than expected. About half the cost of the work has been partly funded by the sale of the Broadlands Archive to the University of Southampton, but the estate admits the remainder has yet to be found. Visitors will be guided by a team of 32 new volunteers who have been undergoing training over the last 4 months. Broadlands will be open Monday to Friday between 1 p.m. and 5:30 p.m., last admission 4 p.m. until September the 7th. Admission charges will be £8 for adults, £4 for children aged 5 to 16. Accompanied children under 5 are free.
Saying it with flowers. The hardly draconian rent has been paid for another year. All Mary Cornelius Reed demands from Naomi House, built on her land at Sutton Scotney, is a bunch of red roses every Midsummer's Day. Mrs. Cornelius Reed, who owns Sutton Manor Nursing Home, offered land to the Children's Hospice back in the 1990s. Naomi House opened in 1997. She did the Hospice Trust a huge favour, as it had been struggling for several years to find a suitable and affordable location in the Winchester area. Originally, 12 red roses were enough to settle the rent, but this year, to mark its 15th anniversary, it has gone up to 15. Mrs. Cornelius Reed visited the hospice with her youngest daughter, Naomi, after whom the hospice was named. Presenting the bouquet was 11-year-old Amy Collins. Amy said, "I would like to thank you on behalf of everyone at Naomi House for allowing this beautiful place to be built on your grounds. I like coming to Naomi House because it's fun. They look after me really well, and the staff take me out to go ice skating, shopping, bowling, and lots of fun things." Amy was joined by her parents, trustees of the charity, and the Naomi House care team as she made her presentation. And there's a very jolly photograph of Amy with the lovely bunch of red roses, and with Mary Cornelius Reed and her daughter, the original Naomi.
They didn't tell me my home would be knocked down. A Winchester family is furious to hear news that their council house could be demolished, only 18 months after they moved in. Rachel White and partner Rob Hugo say they have spent at least £6,000 since moving to Milland Road in Highcliffe. They claim they were not told by the council that the three-bedroom house has long been earmarked for demolition. The City Council last week announced a £50 million house-building programme and proposes to knock down the two pairs of semi-detached houses at 67 to 69 and 71 to 73 Milland Road and construct 15 houses. It is part of a plan to spend £5.3 million in 2013 to 2014 on 41 council homes, including the 15 homes in Milland Road, at a cost of £1.95 million. Ms. White, 33, said the first she was aware of the threat was on reading the Hampshire Chronicle last week. She said the council says it wants to build properties, but it says nothing about houses being knocked down. I'm really disgusted. My neighbours in 67, 71 and 73 were told about 8 years ago that their homes were earmarked for development. When I moved in, the property was in a really bad condition, but I saw its potential. We have spent about £6,000 getting it to a good standard, redecorating and recarpeting, putting garden fencing up. At no point did anyone say to me that this house could be taken away from us. Ms. White, who has three children, aged 13, 8 and 3, said the family would never have moved to Milland Road had they known of the threat. She said there were many three-bed properties in Milland, Vale and Portal Roads in Highcliffe, which are lived in by single tenants or couples. Calling for a review of the housing system, she said the council should be building sheltered housing to free up those homes for families. If the 15 new homes are family homes, then it will put strain on All Saints Primary School and on parking. Ward City Councillor Chris Pine said council house building had only become a live issue in the last 6 months. He said, but someone ought to have been aware it was a possibility. It suggests the system we operate isn't always the most efficient.
Thank you. And that concludes our extracts from the Chronicle for this week. I'll give you again the person to call if you have any problems with your recording, and that is Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826, 01962 862 826. And we want to thank our editors of this week, which is Irene Dowding and Bill Argles, excuse me. We also thank our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And we say a special thank you to our readers, Claire Porter.
Bye.
Robin Freeman.
Goodbye.
And Jerry Tough.
Goodbye.
And from me, Ros Lydiard, goodbye. And we all here hope you have a good week, perhaps with a little more sunshine. And when you finish with this week's recording, would you please put the memory stick in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.